Hey guys, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and I'm really excited that you have decided to take time out of your busy schedules to come and hang out today. We're really grateful for you tuning in. And if you have been listening to the podcast for a while, we really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Hopefully you have subscribed so that you never miss an episode. But if not, or if you are new to the show, get yourself over to iTunes, Stitcher, animaltrainingacademy.com, or whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on, and hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss a single episode. We are bringing you today's episode on behalf of the Animal Training Academy, or ATA, membership. If you like the conversations in these podcasts, then I want to invite you to continue them with like-minded people within the ATA membership area, which you can find out more about over on the ATA website. Within the membership, you can get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web classes, plus a huge library of videos and projects to problem solve different training situations. And we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group, forums area, and WhatsApp chat groups. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behaviour nerds. But we will get started on today's episode, where we will be talking to one Jeff Fleming, who's going to be talking to us about what's known as crucial conversations, tools for talking when stakes are high. And I'm really excited about getting the opportunity to record a podcast on this topic, because I feel that conversations that have high stakes are ones that we are frequently finding ourselves in as positive reinforcement animal trainers, as we want so badly to disseminate information about what we do and why we do it. The outcomes of these conversations and our ability to effectively engage in them when our emotions are running strong have a great impact on the animals and their trainers that we encounter. So the information included in today's episode is so important for us moving forward as a community. But before we dive in, let me introduce today's guest, Jeff Fleming. Jeff is the General Manager in Business Development at Vital Smarts Australia and New Zealand, which is licensed to deliver the crucial conversations training in this part of the world. He is both a skilled facilitator with intimate knowledge of crucial conversations and the other Vital Smart product sets, and his business prowess has been honed over many years working with very senior levels of numerous large organisations. In addition to his business consulting and training expertise, Jeff regularly presents to an array of audiences on topics such as the creation of high-performance teams, speaking up with confidence, and building accountability. His audiences range from small executive retreats to large conferences in a variety of industries, from healthcare, security, retail, and construction, through to pharmaceuticals and not-for-profits. Jeff also has good practical experience helping leaders assess their cultures to identify where employees are frequently avoiding the crucial conversations. He has successfully implemented crucial conversations training in many organizations, helping employees learn to speak up about all manner of issues, including business performance, leadership, quality, and safety. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Jeff to the show today, who's patiently waiting by. Jeff, how are you?
Morning, Ryan. How are you?
Yeah, doing very good, Jeff. And thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy day today to come and hang out with us animal training geeks and share this really important information. Really appreciate that.
Sounds good, and hopefully we can contribute well today, and hopefully my information today is as good as your introduction. I'll be working on that.
Great, and we're going to get going on the main topic soon. But before we do, Jeff, can you just help everyone listening understand a little bit more about you and your organisation, Vital Smarts? What does Vital Smarts do?
Yeah, good question, Ryan. So Vital Smarts are a USA-based firm. They operate out of Utah, Salt Lake City in Utah. Oh, actually just south of Salt Lake City in Utah, at a town called Provo. And Vital Smarts were founded probably about 20 years ago, and all the work that they've done is based on about 30 years of research. And so Vital Smarts, I guess, background and passion is around organizational and behavioral psychology. So all the founders have got a behavioral psychology background. And so Vital Smarts currently operate under license in some 35 countries around the world. And their training products are delivered in about 18 different languages. And so Vital Smarts really have a global footprint. The work that they do really cuts across cultures. And so one of the things we'll talk about today is people's inability and lack of motivation to speak up when the pressure's really on is definitely not a cultural one. Many cultures around the world struggle with this. It's a difficult one to resolve, and it's really about when people fail to speak up, what are the consequences? Or if people do speak up and speak up poorly, then what are the consequences? They're a different set of consequences, and they're both usually adverse consequences. So all the work that they've done, as I said, is based on understanding this is where people are at. It's where we've evolved from. It's the old, you know, caveman fight or flight syndrome, and how we operate these days as professionals, and how we deal with going to silence, and how we can help people to step up and say something even when the pressure is really on. So that's a little bit about, you know, where Vital Smart sit and I guess some of the work that they've done.
And that's pretty cool that it's been translated. You said into 18 different languages, didn't you?
Yep.
And how are we doing over here in Australia and New Zealand, Jeff? Are we on par with the rest of the world where we've got exactly the same problems? Or are there any cultural differences? Or is the information just flat out generic, pretty much the same worldwide?
Yeah, look, I think if you look at, I guess, cultures in Australia, and our primary area that we work in and that we would not only market to but help organisations to, you know, deliver the training, because most of our training is delivered by internal trainers, a lot of those organisations will use, and there's a range of tools that they'd use to measure their culture. And there's things like Human Synergistics, which is a global tool. There's Lominger. There's a range of others. And sometimes organizations develop their own. And in healthcare, they usually have government. When healthcare are publicly funded, as opposed to private organizations, government have a number of ways of measuring to make sure that, you know, if government are investing in these healthcare organizations, they're getting results. But cultures, generally speaking, in Australia and New Zealand, are classified as one of avoidance, if that makes sense. So when I say avoidance, our preferences as humans, if there is a problem and it's a tough one to deal with, then I'll do whatever I do to avoid it. Now, professionally, I might say that's something we'll take offline, which could mean we'll talk about it later, but it could also mean let's never bring it up again. And there's other ways where we might change the subject, and these are a lot of things we cover off in training. There's a ways that we would professionally avoid the conversation to the point that the term we would use, and you've probably heard it before, they call it the elephants in the room, and these are the undiscussables. These are the things that we should talk about, we need to talk about, and we have to, we just don't. And because we don't, we have more small talk and we suffer the consequences of not dealing with the really big important issues.
And I think every single person listening to the podcast right now can go, oh, I remember sometime in my life when I was in that situation. And if they say that they can't, then they're probably lying. I think that's kind of demonstrated the point that it's a universal thing that spans cultures. And you additionally said that this is based, the information that you're about to share with us and that Vital Smarts is based on is from 30 years of research, did you say?
Yeah, it's probably more like, I'd say 30 plus years of research. But the four initial founders of Vital Smarts, as I said, all had organisational psychology backgrounds. And so they all had this understanding that if we actually change behaviours within organisations, that people operate, think and operate in a different way, then the organisation's going to get a different result. So if everyone in the organisation learns to actually speak up, and they may not be orators, but if everyone is 10% better, what impact might it have? And so the 30 plus years of research says that, you know, everything we do, everything we deliver is very well grounded in the fundamentals of human behavior. It's not new age stuff. You know, there may be other, you know, ways that we deal with these things these days and the way we collaborate, but the foundation is this is what happens under pressure. Okay. This is the way we typically operate. It's probably not likely to change for the next 10,000 years. So people under pressure that need to get results, you know what they need? They don't need to be motivated. They need skills and tools and the ability to be able to speak up in a way that creates safety, that has other people not only listening to them, but has others buying into their conversations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and if you're listening and it doesn't make sense, we're going to unpack all of this a little bit more as we move forward. So, and just one more thing, the company, well, the Crucial Conversation stuff started off with a book. Have I got that the right way around, or was the book part of an overall strategy to roll out a training?
Okay, there was when the four founders came together, you know, and however that happened, maybe they met at a party or something, however that happened, but they all came together with similar interests. And when they put together the work that they have done, what they saw was the work that they had done was a whole range of different programs, but it led down to this one thing. And that one thing was, when conversations become unsafe, people will not speak up. You know, some will, but the majority won't. And so what they then did was they developed a really early forerunner of crucial conversations that was called something like Pathways to Dialogue. That was like the forerunner. This was before the book, and this was before lots of things happened. And, you know, in essence, the pathway dialogue was that if I get some fundamental principles about why I should speak up, and some fundamental principles, what happens is if a conversation is going to become unsafe, and again, we can, as you said, unpack these later, what that looks like, and I can proactively take action now to keep the conversation safe, I have got a much better opportunity to not be more assertive or be a better communicator. But if I can make it safe now, I can then speak up. And so that then led to a version one, I think, of Crucial Conversations, which in the early days was delivered in a two-day training format using the old VHS video cassettes and just a whole range of early technology. They went to version two, version three, and now we're into a newer version. And the book itself was written about maybe 10 years ago, and there was a revised version that came out about 3 or 4 years ago. So the foundations of Crucial Conversations are what you would read if you actually, and I know you have, Ryan, you've read the Crucial Conversations books. That's what you'd read, and that's the training we deliver globally.
And for those listening, we'll say this at the end as well, but if you wanted to get your hands on a copy of the book, what's the best location to go find it?
You just Google it, and anything through, I mean, if you're in Australia, New Zealand, we can certainly help you out. McGraw-Hill are the publishers, so if you Google McGraw-Hill, but you probably can't buy directly from them. They're the publishers and warehouses. But for Amazon, I think there's different links in different countries in Australia. I think it's called Fish Pond, which I think is Australia, New Zealand, or there's Booktopia, or obviously, you know, bookstores as well. And if you get stuck with all those, then, you know, we can talk about, I'll get you a link and we can show you where to go to get your copy of a book.
Cool. And if you're like me and find very little time to sit down and open a book, then there's the audio book available.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
John, going through again at the moment with some people in Animal Training Academy. But we just covered a lot there, and like we said at numerous times, we have to unpack some of the stuff moving forward because I'm sure it's not making sense to everyone. So let's rewind right back to the start. And we're a big fan of unpacking labels here at Animal Training Academy, Jeff. So we realize Crucial Conversations is a label. What does that look like? How would you identify something? What kind of things would you see in a crucial conversation?
Yeah, if I take you perhaps just through, let's say, an overview, and, you know, as I'd normally talk about on webinars, is that, you know, we'll cover in 45 minutes on a webinar what is based on, you know, 30 plus years of research. It's a very, very comprehensive two-day training followed by a fairly comprehensive, you know, skills embedding program. I'm going to pack all that into 45 minutes. So let me do that now in about one. But the two-day training, and you'd see this when you read the book, it would make so much sense. And as you said before, if you can't read the book, I think you go to audible.com and you can download a copy of Crucial Conversations, is a set of principles and skills. Now, I say principles first is because the principles are the foundation of the two-day training. So the principles say, you know, before my mouth opens, what I need to do, I need to get my mind right, I need to get my heart right, I need to get myself in a place where I'm able to speak up in a way that not only is safe, but has me heard and has other people stepping up and speaking. There's no point if I'm speaking up safely, no one else is speaking. You know, we're not really, it's just me. And so if you look at it from the point of view of the training, 90% of it is focusing on getting my skills right, and 10% is focusing on, you know, helping other people to step out of silence and speak up. This is about something you'll do to someone else. This is about get me right first. And so the first part, and really day one of training, is all the principles around where am I stuck, get my intent right, what are unsafe conversations look like, how I get my brain right before the training, before the conversation, and then the initial skill set to help people in different ways to speak up.
And there's three from the book, taken from the book, there's three defining characteristics of a crucial conversation. Can you share with everyone listening what they are?
Yeah, and the USA sort of framed them a little bit differently, but I think the first one, we talk about stakes are high. That's the first one. So if you look at it from a, you know, this little triangle, what it says is that we have a situation, okay, that we're struggling to deal with, and, you know, conversations are always directly proportional to importance. That makes sense? So, you know, the conversation is something that we need to, if it's a conversation where we, between, you know, friends and associates have just a misunderstanding outstanding. You wouldn't actually call that was something that was, you know, you wouldn't say the stakes are high. That's important. So it's all relative. And so, you know, the number one is that we all have an opinion and often our opinions are different. So that's number one. Number two is that the second one is it's around a particular issue. But the most important part about it is how important is that issue? So that issue is in, for example, around a partnership. A business partnership, or it's around an important family issue or a health issue, you know, yours or mine or someone else's health, or it's around money or a significant amount of money, or it's around a career. Does that make sense? It's all those things that the higher the importance and the more our opinions differ, okay, the more as people we're going to pull apart. We're going to see it from different perspective and believe my way is right.
And with animal trainers in this community that we're speaking to right now, often these high stakes are about the animals that we're influencing and the ethics and procedures and tools and techniques that we're using with our animals. So I'm sure you as a listener have probably found yourself as a positive reinforcement animal trainer in situations where you've seen stuff that is being used with animals that you know from your knowledge and experience isn't probably the best way that we can engage in teaching these animals. So you might want to go and speak to these people. So that would constitute a situation that you're labelling as stakes are high. Is that correct, Jeff?
Yeah, and 100%, Ryan. And sometimes stakes are high will increase directly proportional to time. So if you and I, for example, have a misunderstanding today, that's about, you know, I'm just going to say it's going to be about that big or that small. If we don't deal with it this today or this week, it's going to be a little bit harder next week. It's going to be a little bit harder in a month's time. In a year's time, it's going to be nearly insurmountable. And I say that because in one of our trainings, over your way at one of the councils, the chief operating officer who was a trainer said, I hadn't spoken to my brother for 10 years. Now, in the first week and month and 6 months before, you know, whatever happened, it probably wasn't that bad. After 10 years, it's a bit like the Great Wall of China. So, you know, before it was high, now it is absolutely huge. And I've got to somehow be able to scale up over that, if that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. And so that's the first characteristic of a crucial conversation. If you're about to get into a conversation or you're thinking about a conversation you've had and the stakes were high, that is one of the characteristics of a crucial conversation. You said the stakes version is potentially different than what I might have read. What are the other characteristics? There's two more in the book that I've got over this side of the planet. Are you able to comment more on that?
When you say the model, well, the other one, as I said, is opinions differ. So it might be an issue, but I'm saying if our opinions differ and it's only a small issue, sometimes it doesn't really matter whether we see things differently or not. So I'm saying the third aspect of it all depends upon its importance. So if it's something that the stakes are really high, then what happens is that's the point that we start to really pull apart. Does that make sense? So we'll keep on pulling apart based on the importance of the issue. And that, again, that will increase over time based on our inability to step up and talk about it today or this week or this month. I'm saying the more we'll pull apart, the more important it gets and the more we both suffer the consequences of being unable to talk about it.
And what about what role do our emotions play in this? Should we be paying attention to our emotions when we're heading into these conversations? Is that an indicator that we're about to enter a crucial conversation?
Yeah, and one of the things that we talk about in training, you talk about some of the principles in training, is that module two, if you remember reading the book, Ryan, is called Start With Heart. And, you know, I remember our initial trainer saying, you know, that all sounds a bit mushy, when maybe it does, but you start with heart is in fact the foundation. For me, the foundation. I don't deliver any training. We've got a team of about 12 people. We've got 5 master trainers and we've got probably 300 internal trainers throughout organisations in Australia and New Zealand. But when I was delivering training, you know, start with heart for me was always the foundation that you brought people back to. And what that says is, what's my intent? And when I say, what's my intent short term might seem like I want to be right. I might want to just, you know, it looks like I don't want to be part of this conversation. I just want to shut you down. What I'm saying is they're all short-term intents, but what's the longer-term intent that I want for you as my friend or my associate or my business partner? What do I really want long-term? And so if I look at it short-term, long-term, the foundation always of crucial conversations is safety. And what happens is when conversations become unsafe, Our emotions get away from us and we almost, it's like road rage. We almost don't even know it happened. It happens like that. And before you know it, I'm taking action right now that seems right, but tomorrow seems like the worst thing I could have done. And so the emotional part about it is usually the thing that we get stuck on, that we justify we're right, and it's usually what brings the conversation to a complete halt.
So is the art then catching yourself in that moment as you feel that emotion? Is that what you do you teach people to kind of look out for that switch from, I've gone here to talk to you about the ethics of training, and suddenly we're attacking each other, and there's in that space somewhere from my intentions being good to like me calling you XYZ or shutting down and walking away. Do you train people to try and catch themselves in that moment? How does that work? Where do people identify, I need to utilize these skills now?
Yeah. And again, if you come back to, you know, start with what's my intent, the step there is, you know, before my mouth opens, and, you know, let's say there's two types of crucial conversations. One is the one that, you know, Ryan and Jeff need to prepare for, or, you know, Jeff's completely oblivious that, you know, he's been quite abrasive. And so Ryan's going to prepare for that conversation, and there's a process to prepare for it. That's number one. The other one is that we're in a conversation together that immediately slips off track and becomes immediately emotional. And so for the latter, you know, it's good to have some skills prepared. Or let's say, let's take this now. This is not going anywhere, and let's regroup. But in the former, I've had some time to prepare. The first thing I want to do is I want to write down, and I'm going to prepare for that by saying, what's my actual intent long-term with Ryan? Do I want to continue to be a friend with Ryan? Absolutely. Do I want to be a business partner with Ryan continually if we're in business together? Absolutely. Do we want to be able to share and collaborate right now? All of the above. And so if that's my intent long-term, then that's the way I'm going to have in my brain, and I have prepared to go into the conversation. And so when the conversation, if it starts to become unsafe, I can stop the conversation at that point. I can mentally bring it back to what I really want, make the conversation safe, and then reframe the conversation. And I know there's a bunch of skills in there, but that foundation always comes back to, what is my actual intent long-term, not in the heat of the moment?
Okay, so ideally you might have some kind of idea that you're about to go into a conversation where, even if you don't go in intentionally, initially your emotions might be low. There is the potential for emotions to rise as the conversation continues. You have different opinions, and the outcome of this conversation, there's high stakes at play. So you're
Something
sat down
is
before.
Pretty important. Sorry.
That's all right. You've sat down before and you've asked, you've written, you said, write down, what is my actual long-term intent with this person? And so when those emotions start to change, then your suggestion is to catch yourself and re-ask yourself that question in the moment.
Yeah. And one of the skills that we teach in the training is, and if I was to use my words, it would be something like, can we just stop? We're not getting anywhere. We're not getting anywhere. And so that means if a conversation was safe and has become unsafe, and in the short term it doesn't look like we're going to be able to recover, then let's agree to stop, and let's agree to get back to what we both really want, and or let's agree to come back tomorrow or a day after when we can talk safely. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is that if the conversation has become unsafe, what I've got to be able to recognize right up front, and this is one of the things we teach in training, is what are the early signs that a conversation is about to become unsafe? Because the other person who is taking a conversation to a point that it's not going to be friendly often doesn't even recognize, because emotions kick in right up front. You know, emotions precede logic, as we know, under pressure, and the way my brain works when blood rushes and adrenaline starts to pump. Emotions are right up front, and I forget the logic and I head off down a path to get me back to safety or be right or do something short term. Me, as the person who has the skills, I've got to be able to recognize that and grab it then. not a minute later, not 2 minutes later, but grab it then and get it back to safety. Otherwise, we know there's going to be this spiral of the conversation that's going to head out of control.
And like I said earlier, Jeff, one thing we are really nerdy about here is unpacking labels. What are the words we use look like? So when we're talking about safety, it's a word we've used a lot in the conversation already. Yeah. What do you mean when you say safety? What do you mean when safety starts to go away? What do you mean by that?
Okay. Yeah, good question. So if you look at it from the point of view of talking to someone, as I have been this morning, the first time about crucial conversations, is that some people see it as being a communication program. And it's, you know, you and I, Ryan, are hopefully pretty good at communicating. when everything's calm and cool and, you know, the waters are smooth and there's no storm, we're good at it. It's when the tsunami kicks in and pressure's on is when our regular communication skills go out the window. So it's not so much a communication program because we forget all those things. And so what it's not a skill set to help us to be any more assertive or to be better a communicator or to, you know, get the edge, if you like. It's none of, or to be a better negotiator. What the skill set is all about is that if I can create an environment where a conversation is safe, what I mean by that is that I have a long-term intent about what I want from this conversation, and I have been overt up front with you about exactly what that intent is. So the idea is you and I have a common understanding about what we, and we agree on what we want. So once we've got that, then we can both agree that the conversation is on track or off track. We can both agree, hopefully, that we're getting to the point that we both want to be. And we can both agree that we've got an outcome from this conversation if our platform up front, okay, it says that this is what we both want from the conversation. And we're going to work hard together to keep the conversation as safe as possible. So emotions are low. And I can be open and candid and forthright and direct, yet compassionate, professional, understanding, and have a focus on maintaining and continuing our relationship, if that's not too many adjectives.
We're a fan of verbs. So if you listen to the show, you listen to this episode, and you're thinking, it all sounds great, but what if I go and talk to this person, Jeff, and my intention is I want them to use the best training methods with their animals so that their animals are enjoying the process and they're going to go talk to someone who's using a chain on their dog that they choke the animal when the animal does something they don't want. Where do you find that people find it challenging to find common ground there, and do you have tools to kind of potentially frame the start of that conversation? Mm-hmm. Where would the common ground be? Would it be going and saying, well, you go.
No, it's good. No, good. And I'll relate it back to, I think we talked about the first time we met about horses, because we're big horse people. I've got a couple of horses. In fact, recently we've just got a rescue horse down from northern New South Wales who arrived at our property very bony, very skinny and, you know, very emaciated. And 4 weeks in, he's looking a lot better. But if I look at over the years of doing a lot of riding, you know, we've ridden through Australia and I've done some riding overseas in Mongolia and things. But my experience around being around people who love horses and who are good horse people, who you would ride with. It's like, let's say, going for a ride with a riding school with an instructor. You know, you'd usually get, this is only my experience, a fairly abrasive comment from someone about getting your ass out of the saddle when you're going up a hill, for example. Or you'd get a comment about, you know, the way you're handling a horse on the ground. And it's usually a fairly upfront and direct with good intent, but I didn't hear the intent. All I heard was this abrasive message arrived, if that makes sense. And so sometimes I think when we're talking to a pet owner, and again, this is your field, not mine, I think we can deliver a message. And if I deliver a message in a way that has people not understanding my intent, they heard the words, but they interpreted what the words meant. And it may not be what you meant them to be, if that makes sense. And so if I'm talking to someone who is a pet owner and they're handling a horse or whatever badly, part of the conversation up front is, I wonder if we can talk about a way that's going to help you get a better result. Does that make sense? And that's just framing a conversation up front. I wonder if I can help you get a better result with your dog, or have your dog being more something, or whatever the animal is. There's a framework in crucial conversations called state, and state will help you in advance prepare that conversation. So I'm going to be clear up front about my intent before we get into the conversation.
Yeah, beautiful. So I'd love to unpack state, but let's just rewind a little bit and make sure everyone's staying with us. So we have a conversation today. Let's use this example that we've been using. We want to talk about positive reinforcement to someone who might be using more aversive techniques. We know that our emotions have the potential to rise significantly throughout that interaction. We as far as we know, our opinions vary significantly, and the stakes are high for this animal and for the other animals that this particular trainer is going to engage with moving forward. We sit down beforehand and we think about what our long-term goals are for this person. And you've just offered an example of how we might do that. We might reframe this in a way that says, I want to help you get better results with your dogs and with your training. Are there any other, when you sit down and write that, Jeff, just before we move on, talk about state. When you sit down to write this, are there any other questions you should ask yourself beforehand? Is it, do you just want to think about the long-term goals that you want with your relationship with this person? Or are there other questions that you can sit down and kind of mull over and write down on a piece of paper and think through before you go into that conversation?
Yeah, if you're going into a crucial conversation and let's say, for example, you've done the training, one of the post-training tools you get is a crucial conversations planner. And it makes more sense when you've done, it's part of the, you know, the crucial conversations IP, but what it helps you to do is prepare for the conversation. And so one of the things that you'd put in there is that, you know, if you've had a, let's say you've had a conversation. So, you know, for example, you know, Jeff's, you know, mishandling, has good intent, but mishandling, and Ryan wants to speak up. If Ryan's spoken up before and the conversation has, it didn't go well, let's just say it didn't go well, it didn't land well for whatever reason, then what Ryan would be then doing is making a list of how the conversation might become unsafe, yeah? What it might sound like, how might it become unsafe, and how might I handle that? How might I keep it on track? And again, this is using the tools. So that's one question, how might it become unsafe? The other one is that we agree at the end of the conversation is how we can work together on this problem. In other words, what I haven't done is dump on you that you have a problem and you need to go away and fix it, you know, without thinking about how that might land and what the consequences might be. So what's our action plan at the end of this conversation so we can both work on a problem together and collaborate on it? So for me, that'd be a big two, is how can I get the conversation back on track and how can we both work together?
Another question that the book taught me, and I've been heavily reinforced for using Jeff, and I included in that pre-conversation sit down, is the importance of also thinking about what you don't want and communicating that to the other party. Can you talk to the importance of that, and is that incorporated into the training you guys do?
Yeah. For me, and you look at the skills, and people get a lot of this wrong. If you went through the, you know, people go through the 2-day training, you walk out and feel like you've got a wheelbarrow, you know, like a really big concrete wheelbarrow full of skills and tools, and it's like where you start. And one of the things we do with organisations is to help them start by, you know, teaching, for example, one skill. The primary skill that I would use every single day out of the training is called contrasting. And people love contrasting when you understand it. It takes, I've taught a lot in workshops. I might have spent 1 or 2 minutes on teaching contrasting, and you need about, you know, 45 minutes, but 1 or 2 minutes was all the time that we had. But contrasting is very helpful to get conversations back on track when I have said something that was it didn't land well, people misunderstood, someone felt disrespected, and I knew that straight away. And often when you say something that could be disrespectful, we pretty much know straight away. And so what contrasting says is, and there's a little framework that says, this is what I do want, sorry, this is what I don't want, and this is what I do want. Does that make sense? And so the purpose of that, this is not I don't want, that is designed to do one thing, and that's to get the conversation back to safety. So if I have been misheard, or I've taken the conversation off track, or I've said something that's disrespectful, that's the last thing I wanted. That's not what I wanted. What I actually wanted was this. And so a really powerful tool that you'd use on the fly, and for some of us that have lots of conversations every day, we have lots of opportunities to take conversations on track. It's how I get it back on track is what I don't want using contrasting skills, and therefore what I do want.
So potentially thinking a little bit about contrasting, what you don't want, what you do want. Think about what you want for the long-term outcome of the relationship with the person and how you want that to look, and kind of make a promise to yourself that, and when you speak to the person, to them, that by the end of the conversation, you're going to agree on how you can work together. Have I worded that correctly?
Yeah. And again, if you look at the skills of contrasting, contrasting is, I'd call it an entree, not a main course, you know. And when I say an entree, it's just a simple statement that gets the, it doesn't solve the problem, it just gets back to safety. And so it could be, one of the examples we use in training is, I've saw someone in my organization take a piece of equipment home or walk out the door with it. And our rule is that equipment does not leave site. So I talk to the person the next day and say, I saw you taking a piece of equipment off site. I'm just wondering what happened. And the person said, you're calling me a thief. That conversation immediately became unsafe. You know what I don't want? The last thing I want to do with that person is to question their integrity. So if I only think that and don't say it, they already think that I think they're a thief. And so, because that's the way the message landed. So how am I going to handle the contrasting skills? Not questioning your integrity. That's what we agreed, and I saw you living with it. And the way that it pans out is this person's dropping it off to a service person on the way home. But I'm saying is that it's how the message landed, how it became unsafe, and how I've been able to grab it and get it back to safety. Why? I go back to module 2. What do I really want? I want a great relationship with a trusted employee. I never want to question their integrity. So I'm going to get this conversation back on track.
And so using contrasting, would you say, I don't mean to question your integrity, I just saw you do this and I'm a little bit unsure about why you'll do that?
And there's no one, you know, set of words. We talk a lot about getting words and frameworks right using contrasting and using, we talk about mutual purpose and using state skills. There's no one way. That's the way I would handle it. You could handle it a different way. But the idea being, I'm going to say, I'd never question your integrity. You know, it's not, that's definitely not what I want. What I really want is to find out that they were the rules. We'd all agree to them. And this is what I saw. So I'm just trying to understand what happened. So I'm just getting it back to safety by just getting the integrity. I'm a thief, just getting it, clearing it right out of the way and getting the conversation back to safety. But again, based on what do I really want for them, me, our relationship, our organisation and the way we operate in the future, not right now.
Yeah, great questions. And earlier before you mentioned, you talked about how people might shut down in that situation. They might not want to talk to you at all. That's what I mean when I say shut down. And just then, in your example, this potential employee said to you, are you calling me a thief? So there's a couple of different ways people can react when they find themselves in situations they might label as unsafe. And the book talks about two of these ways. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
So when you talk about two ways, what do you mean? I'm
it's
not quite sure the question.
Fight. No, it's the silence or violence.
Cool. Great question. And this leads back to the old, you know, we always talk about the caveman syndrome. That's why I said in, you know, 10,000 years, Ryan, we'll be so good that we'll never need crucial conversations. But right about now, you know, we still have that, you know, caveman evolution. And what that says is that, you know, under pressure, I'll do one or two things. And one of the things you can certainly shoot out to all your listeners after this is the link that says, you know, there's a link on the USA site that's, you know, measuring my style under stress. And that'll show you probably what you already knew, but it's a good way of, you know, checking in. So silence says I will, and that's a number of things. It may not be that I actually go silent, but these are recognizing signs of lack of safety. So silence can be, for example, that I change the subject. It could be that I make light of, you know, you and I talk about something that's really important, that's critically important today, but I might say it's just not that big a deal. You know what? It's a really big deal. So I'd make light of it, and that's a bit like, you know, I'm deflecting away from it. Or the other one is we could just say nothing. So they're forms of silence, different forms. And there's others. They're just the ones we talk about in the training. You know, violence is a whole different matter. And whilst we're not talking about taking a swing at someone, you know, it can be controlling. So I'll, you know, turn the volume up a little bit, and that's my way of controlling the conversation. I could label, and you talked before about labels, and, you know, if I have a problem with someone, I could say that's because they're and that could be, you know, because they're a, that's just the way that, you know, dog trainers or dog handlers or whatever they are, that's a label. Or the other one is just flat out attacking. And that can be, I just come in verbally and right now I have no concern about the consequence. And so it's those both forms of, you know, fight or flight, silence or violence. And again, there's different ways, but they're the ones we talk about in training that will take a conversation right off track that right now I will believe that I did everything right. And tomorrow I might completely regret it. But in the heat of the moment, that's where the conversation can go.
So if you find that safety is being jeopardized, could you break it down into a number of things that could happen? You could go to silence, you could go to violence, or you could handle the situation really well.
Absolutely.
Are they kind of the three outcomes or are there more?
Well, they could be. Let's go back to that example because that is an example using the training. So, you know, here's you know, Ryan and Jeff, if I can use us again. And Ryan left the early, you know, previous day with this piece of equipment that it's never supposed to leave the premises. He left. And so here's our challenge. And, you know, what we talk about in the training is, and what would happen, how would you handle this on your worst day? Does that make sense? What would happen on your worst day as opposed to your best day? So let's imagine I'm talking to Ryan the next day and I say, you know, what happened with this piece of equipment? And, you know, that morning, someone, you know, you had a bad day, someone scratched your car, someone, you know, you had an accident with your animal, something went wrong. Not thinking clearly. And not only that, you've come in and I've dumped this on you and all hell breaks loose in your mind. I don't know any of that. I don't know what's happened to get you to this point. All I know is we have this policy issue. Does that make sense? So I know that. So when you say you're calling me a thief, I could deflect by going, oh, look, it's not that big a deal. It's okay. Let's just move on. Does that make sense, right? I could say, let's just move on, which means this is way too hard. It's above my brain space and skill set right now. So I'll leave it and I'll walk away and we'll talk about something else. Knowing in my mind I am dissatisfied, because I never really covered that issue. And I might now not really ever trust Ryan because at the end of the day, I think he was trying to pinch something. Is it, you know, because we've never talked about it. And Ryan's going, Jeff, he is a pain in the backside because all he does is threaten me with stuff. And I was trying to do the right thing by dropping this piece of equipment off. And, you know, no one, you know, why would I bother? I'm not going to do that again. Why would I bother? So you can see all those things. We call those stories. All those stories happen for lack of facts. So, but that would be my way of deflecting is to say, oh, look, it's not a big deal. Let's talk about something else. Or I could say, what is your freaking problem today, Ryan? What the hell? All I wanted to know was a piece of equipment and you're waving your arms around and doing it. I've just gone to violence and I'm attacking. Get that? Different consequences in both. And I might then shut you down and you might then say something but walk away going, why do I even bother working for this organization? Why don't I just go somewhere else where I'm going to be happier and people are going to trust me? So consequences both ways in silence versus violence. And on that day, we can both justify we did the right thing until a week later when, you know, Ryan's resigned and gone somewhere else. Or Ryan used to be a great contributor, he's not anymore because why would he bother? They're all the consequences of our inability to step up and, you know, the way we deflect the conversation.
Yeah, and you said the you called the some part in there, I can't remember exactly what part, stories. And then you talked about facts as well. So
yeah.
So how do we see something like somebody leaving the office with some equipment? And where do we stop ourselves and go, okay, cool. How do I divide stories from facts? What is the skill set that we need to develop there?
Yep. Yeah, and that's part of the, in the training, Ryan, we talk about, you probably remember this from the book, we talk about facts versus stories. And there are, you know, some of the key modules, once you've got the, you know, the start with heart, what's my intent, right? It's all about what I call mastering my stories. When I say what we globally call mastering my stories. And what that says is that when I saw Ryan, if we use this example, leaving the previous day, I could be telling myself a bunch of stories, okay? I could be telling myself, what's Ryan's problem? Is he so negligent about procedures that he just wants to run his own race and do it? That could be one story I'm telling myself. The second one is that, you know, we've got policies and why isn't Ryan following the policy? I could be thinking that. There's a number of ways I could be thinking and they are all stories. They are stories in the absence of facts. Now, Ryan's story making hasn't started yet because he just left doing the right thing. His stories will start the next day when Jeff speaks up to, you know, steps up to Ryan and has the conversation. Suddenly Ryan's stories kept. What's the first one? I'm getting threatened, okay, about being a thief when I was really trying to do the right thing. That's my first story. My second story is, what am I bother doing this? Because I work hard and do stuff and try and help out and no one, you know, no one appreciates me. There's my second story. The third story is, why would I work here? Because no one really cares. I'm going to find somewhere else to go. That's my third story. You get the stories? They're like a rock in a pond. And so what we learn in the training is that what are actual facts and what are stories, and understand that under pressure, stories become facts. Because when I'm really under pressure, Ryan is definitely a thief when I'm not thinking clearly. When I'm thinking clearly, what I know is this is what I saw. The fact is Ryan left with a piece of equipment. That's the only fact I have. And I may not have even seen it. Someone else may have, you know, mentioned it to me in passing. So not only did I not see it, but someone else passed it on. And so that's the story I have. So I have to put that in a way that is presented to Ryan that has him understanding that this is only what I saw. I'm drawing absolutely no conclusions, but as a manager and someone who's responsible for this organization, this team, I just want to better understand what the problem is. The challenge with that is all these stories will get in the way and take a conversation right off track.
So would you call what you just described as one part of something you mentioned earlier, so I'm hoping we could potentially transition into this and unpack this a little bit more, of state and kind of talking tentatively about your facts?
Yeah, if you look at the actual model itself, you talked about the triangle before, Ryan, but the model itself and the essence of the model is what happens before the conversation, what happens during the conversation, and then what happens after, like where do we go from here? And so things like what's my intent and mastering my stories, these are all things that happen before my mouth opens. Otherwise, I step in. It's like, you know, the person dealing with someone who is poorly handling a pet. They go straight into the conversation. And typically what we tend to do, we typically go straight in with stories and then wonder why the conversation becomes unsafe. I've just gone straight in with assumptions and innuendos not based on any facts. And that's the result I'm getting from the conversation. And more importantly, that's the result I'm getting from the relationship. And so what's my intent? observing the early signs of silence and violence and mastering my stories are all the framework that we prepare before we step into the conversation, number one. And number two is they are the skills with a bit of practice that we would use in the conversation. When it becomes unsafe because something came out of my mouth and it landed poorly, I grab it. We call it step out of the conversation or step out of content. Step out of what we're talking about. Let's go back to my intent. Let's go back to what just happened and let's reframe in a way that has us stepping up. But it's all those principles I have to get right in my brain before I step in, because when a conversation becomes unsafe and people go to silence and violence, as humans, we tend to do one thing, and that is join them. So when we're both unsafe and both getting into violence, you know what's going to happen.
And so building on from this separating effects and separating what isn't fact and what is story, the STATE acronym says first share your facts and then tell your story. So to kind of go into conversation and said, I saw you leave with this light and I'm wondering if this, that and the other. And then you tell your stories. Is that kind of how you frame the conversation? Yeah. You share your story with them?
Sorry, Ron. Sorry.
No, that's it. Yeah. That's all.
The key around STATE is that, and it's an acronym, and it becomes the fundamental framework. It's almost like it's the underlying skill set that truly defines crucial conversations. You know, I guess complemented by the principles to get my brain right beforehand. The STATE is the framework I use in the conversation. That's the during bit. And then the after bit is we've agreed, we're on the same page. Where do we go from here? To do two things. Number one is to resolve the problem we're talking about. Number two is that we agree that we'll continue to use this framework in the event that our conversation between us comes unsafe again. You get those? So those two things. And so what the framework fundamentally says is, like the example we talked about, I'm wondering if I can talk to you about something that happened yesterday. It's almost like, and again, you'd frame it up in a number of ways, something that happened yesterday. And what I didn't say was, I'm wondering if we can talk about you pinching a piece of equipment yesterday. What I didn't say was that. I said, I wonder if we can talk about something that happened yesterday. If it's a very, very touchy subject, I might start with, can I talk about something that happened yesterday that I'm just feeling really uncomfortable about? Does that make sense? It's just frame it up in a way to say, this is really hard for me to talk about as well. That's up front. And, you know, and then when I talk about the facts might be yesterday, David mentioned that you left at normal time, but you had this piece of equipment, and you know, we'd always agreed that equipment never leaves sight. Does that make sense? So what I'm saying is that's me sharing the facts, sharing the facts. The second part, the telling the story, is that we've agreed as a team, we signed off and agreed that equipment never leaves the premises. That's the tell the story. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. STA, and asking is, I'm wondering, what happened? I didn't say, I'm wondering why you're pinching equipment. I'm wondering why you're so poor at following procedures. What I'm wondering is, what happened? Does that make sense? That's the first three steps of STATE.
And then the next one is talk tentatively. And so does that sum up what you just said?
So the first three are what to do and the last two are how to.
Uh-huh.
So first three says, share the facts, tell the stories, ask for others' paths. Get those three right. And, you know, if you're going to prepare for the conversation, have it, you know, and you think it might become unsafe, you could prepare in advance. But talking tentatively means, I'm wondering what happened. Being definitive says, it looked like you were actually taking the equipment home. You were taking unauthorized. That's talking. I call that talking definitively. I have already made a decision. And yes, Ryan, you're already guilty. You know, talking tentatively means, I'm just wondering what happened. You know, and the last one, E, is exploring. And exploring means, can you help me out? And that means I've done it as attentive as I can. I'm now handing it over to you, Ryan. I haven't made any, you know, and the conversation could still become unsafe if Ryan's had a bad day, which means we're going to use some other skills. But let's imagine Ryan's had an okay day, but he's feeling a bit pressured. You know, nothing else really adverse has gone wrong. So it's not his worst day. It's about midway. I've put it as tentative as I can, and I've handed it to Ryan to have him step into the conversation in hopefully a really safe way to step up and let me know what happened. So STATE.
Share your facts, tell your story, ask for others' path, talk tentatively, and the last one, I've got in my notes here, encourage others' path. You said explore.
Same thing. Curry sounds just great. Explore. And again, so these, don't forget, these are some sort of US terminology. We might change them, you know, whether we're delivering in training in Australia or we're delivering training in 2 weeks in Singapore or we've done training in India. You might frame it differently. But the concept is exploring means, I'm going to hand this back to you, Ryan. Can you let me know how you see it?
And then talking about the story part of the state, and you talked about mastering your stories and distinguishing the difference between them and facts. Yeah. There's different stories that the book talks about, and this kind of helped me frame things. And sometimes we go to victimizing people, and sometimes we go to, or sometimes we go to, sorry, should I say, be making us the victim. We tell stories that make us a victim, and we tell stories that make others the villain.
Yeah, and look, when you look at the mastering my stories aspect of the training, we talk about, just as a way of better understanding, and there's probably other ways as well, but we talk about three different ways that we tell stories. Why do we tell stories? What it does is it helps fill the void with what little facts we have. If we want to complete the picture, that's what we do. And the other thing we do is, if we think or we know that we've done something wrong, it helps us to get off the hook. It lets us off. You know, we get out of playing Monopoly, we get out of jail free. And what, there's three of them. Number one is a victim story. And what that victim story says is, I've done everything right, and yet I still get blamed. So that could be Ryan, because Ryan said, I was doing all the right things. I was doing all the right things, and now you're climbing all over me. So that's a, what you call a victim story. And that could also be, I'm in a meeting and someone said something wrong, and what I've done is I have shot them down. I didn't mean to shoot them down, but I actually shot them down. The way I delivered my message was a bit like me when I'm riding and someone said, get your ass out of the saddle when you're going up a hill. You've got to stand up in the stirrups and grab onto the mane and don't put any pressure on the horse. But the way the message arrives says, I'm trying to do everything right here and all I get is your rubbish. That's a victim story, okay? Villain story is, I'm doing everything right, you're the problem. You know, Jeff says, I've just delivered the message here to Ryan, for crying out loud, about something happened yesterday, and all he's doing is carrying on like, in Australia, there used to be an old expression, a two-bob watch, which means, you know, behaving poorly. And the third one is helpless. And you know, helpless was, in Australia, we talked about avoidance, it's our specialty. Helpless means, there's nothing more I can do. Ryan just keeps doing this. We have a personality conflict. You know, people say this all the time. There's nothing more I can do. Ryan is just the way he is, and that's the way he reacts anytime. So why even bother talking to him? So you've got victim stories, you've got villain stories, and you've got helpless stories. Different ways we get out of jail, okay? We escape the truth, okay? Or we fill in the void if someone, you know, has said something or done something, and we think they've done something, how we complete the picture in our minds.
And does that remove us, do you think, from acknowledging your role in the conversation going bad?
Absolutely. And there's a great, they don't do it anymore in training. And it was one of my favorite exercises, Ryan. You'd really enjoy it. And the way it works is this, and it's a way you practice. And in, you know, in training, we've spent a couple minutes talking about contrasting and mastering my stories. In the training, you spend an hour or more and then you practice them. But one of the great exercises, you've come into a building. It's a busy morning in a high-rise building, and you walk into the lift, and you're just about, and what happens, the lift's doors are about to shut, and you're in a rush. You're in a rush to get somewhere, and you see someone struggling across. They look like they're in a hurry, and they've got a box or they've got a trolley with parcels, and they're heading in the other direction really quickly, because I need to get in the lift. You reach over and push the button to shut the doors. You get that? I shut the doors. What are the stories you tell yourself? That's an exercise you run on the training. What are the stories you tell yourself to justify what you did? Because the bottom line is, you probably could have waited another 5 seconds and it wouldn't have made any difference anyway. But what do you justify? You justify, hey, look, I'm in a hurry. You know, the lift's already full. There's other lifts. And when you take the class through this exercise, they'll come up with about 50 different victim, villain, helpless stories that will let themselves off the hook. We are awesomely good at it. But the bottom line is, we could have waited another 5 seconds. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And that's a question I pulled from the book that I've been using over the years is, am I pretending not to notice my role in the problem? And often when I ask that, and you really break it down, you realize that there's things you could have done, always things you could have done better.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, you look at victim, villain, helper stories. And one is my absolute, you know, let's say that the two or three favorites of mine, one is always, is what's my intent in getting that right. Number two is using contrasting skills, because we use it all the time. But around helpless stories, it's how do I get back in the game? And, you know, how I get back in the game is, what do I do today to get me what I really want. Does that make sense? What do I do today? What's the one action I can take today to step out of helplessness and get what I really want? Not what do I change about my entire life, but what's the one thing I can do? And that's one of those things about, as you said, like a victim. The victim says, well, hang on, what am I not noticing about my behavior that's causing this to happen? That's the way I step out of it, you know? Villains is, you know, what's my part of the problem? If I've said, well, Ryan is a... let me give you a label of being a difficult person to deal with. You know, what part of the, you know, what's my role in this? But the third one is, what do I do today to get what I really want? So that's how we teach in the training, is to how to get out of, we call it mastering my stories. And they all have to happen before I step in the conversation. Because if I don't get those right, and Ryan and Jeff have had the conversation in the past, as soon as we sit down to talk, what we both do, we put these little cassettes or CDs or whatever. And what they are is we're going to replay how the conversation went last time, and it's pretty much going to happen again, and we'll both walk away, A, being dissatisfied, but both blaming each other.
Right. So if you're in an organization or a marriage or a business partnership or a friendship or something, and you listen to this podcast, you go read the book, and you go, okay, cool, I'm going to practice the things that they've been talking about. I've sat down, I've done this stuff, and you go into that conversation, you have to acknowledge that that's potentially not going to solve everything for you. It's just a starting point, because you've got a whole bunch of stuff to kind of undo there.
Yeah, and sometimes we talk about in organizations, we call them legacy issues, and that is that happens in public health, but happens in lots of organisations. I've got an issue or a problem with someone that's been banging around for years, like years. And often it bangs around because of the stories. Sometimes it's because of industrial pressure, like it might be a union issue. It could be a number of things which have prevented us from resolving the problem. And so all that happens is I sit down and have the same conversation we had last time. What's the old, you know, definition of insanity? We went down the same discussion path and expected something to change, and it didn't. And we both walked away, A, dissatisfied, but B, knowing that, you know, we both blamed each other because we're both whatever we are. And that's why it doesn't go anywhere. So if it's been banging around for years, this happens a lot in some industries. The first time I have a move forward because I have implemented the skills may not resolve a very difficult problem, but it is the first time we've ever had a move forward. That's a move forward. And that might mean a follow-up discussion in a week's time with some more resources, some more information to have another move forward. This is never the magic bullet. This isn't the wave the magic wand and all the problems go away. But each move forward might help undo years of, you know, lack of communication. And it might take 10, but each move forward gives us confidence that we can keep going.
Yeah, well, it really resonates with animal training and making sure we have good relationships and trust with our animals, and breaking down behaviors down into teachable, shapeable approximations. So that kind of sounds like what you're talking about then. Hey, I want to throw an example at you, Jeff, and kind of think about how we can utilize the things you've talked about today to potentially manage the example I throw at you. But before we do, there's two more acronyms I was just hoping to quickly go through with you that the book teaches. One of them, let's start with CRIB. What is CRIB, and where would we insert it in this whole process we've just talked about?
Okay, yeah. Look, and CRIB is actually an acronym. We probably don't use it as much these days just for different reasons. But the essence of CRIB is really about, it's about what we call mutual purpose. Mutual purpose. And often, you know, in life and in business and in helping people around, you know, better handling their animals, that I know almost nothing about apart from, you know, working with horses, is we often want the same thing. We often want the same thing. We come at it from polar opposites. And the challenge is we lose track of the fact that, you know, we actually do want, we both want the same outcome. We get stuck on where we're at. And then, you know, the start of the Kush conversations is, where are you stuck? It's where you're stuck. And we can't get to that mutual purpose. And so, you know, CRIB is all about, it's about the opportunity for us to agree, this is what we both really want. And that goes back to that thing about, what's my intent? You know, there's a skill set in, not in conversations, but in accountability. And what it says is, if I'm going to step in and deal with a performance issue or something, whatever it is that it's all about managing, we call it the HHM, which is a hazardous half minute. And that's the first 30 seconds of the conversation will pretty much set the tone for the rest of the conversation. So if I've stepped up and someone, and I said something that someone felt was accusing them of something, then my hazardous half minute has not gone well. And so part of that hazardous half minute is being clear on my intent up front. And part of being clear on my intent up front might be stating, I think this is what we both want. We both want for you to get a better result from whatever it is. Have I got that right? That's what we both want. And so when we've talked about it in the past, I think we've both headed off and I've gone north and you've gone south. So I'm wondering if we can talk about a way that we can both get to that. So CRIB is really about getting to a point of saying that is our mutual purpose. Let's be overt about it, not have it covert in my mind. Let's be overt about it and let's work on a way of keeping us on track, even though there are points along the way that we're both going to see differently. Let's use that as our points north. And sometimes, and one of the examples I had in training is that, Jeff and his partner or Ryan and his partner want to go on holidays, but we both want to go to completely different places and we can't agree on the right place to go. Let's work out something in between that maybe works for both of us. Okay. So that's what we call inventing a new mutual purpose. Okay. Because we can't agree on one of these. So let's work out what we both really want from these destinations and let's work out maybe somewhere else that's going to work well for both of us. And so that's having that thing about, my intent is to continue to have a great relationship with you and spend some time traveling overseas and getting all those things. So let's come back to these destinations and work out what we both want and then maybe find something else that works both for us. And that's all about what we call inventing a new mutual purpose.
Cool. So the acronym I've got written down here says C, commit to seek mutual purpose.
Yeah.
R, recognize the purpose behind the strategy. So ask what the other person, why the other person is doing it. Invent a mutual purpose for I and then brainstorm new strategies.
Yeah. And so, and that's why within the training, most of our trainers don't actually use the acronym. It's just changed a little bit. But the essence of the CRIB acronym is to seek and agree upon a mutual purpose. HHM, Hazard's Half Minute, says be overt about your intent right up front. So if I'm saying, the example is, I wonder why you're wanting to travel to, I want to go to Mongolia next year to ride horses, which we do want to do. But I'm talking to someone who goes, well, why the hell would you want to do it? Because I want to go to somewhere or other. It's working at what we both want. You know what I mean? And that might mean that we can't agree on one of those two destinations, but we can agree on something that's going to keep us both happy. And that's our intent. Our intent is to be happy together. That is our intent. So we'll find something that'll help us to get to that.
And one of the quotes I pulled from the book that really helped me throughout the years is, it seems like we're both trying to force our view on each other. I commit to stay in this discussion until we have a solution that satisfies both of us.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem sometimes, Ryan, sometimes in the heat of the moment, all I can think about is what I want, not what we want. So what that might mean is let's regroup. I remember a lady in training once, she did the training and she contacted us from one of the universities and she said she went back and dealt with a legacy. Remember we talked about this legacy issue? And she stepped out boldly confident but unprepared. And the conversation was the worst she'd ever had. So she took evasive action. She stepped out. She jumped in a car, went for a drive. And we've got with the training some of the skills and principles narrated by the authors that you can get a link to and listen to them. She listened to some of those things. Went back that night, rewrote the conversation, did some preparation, stepped up next day to have the conversation. So you know what I mean? Today may not be the right time to talk about it. So what hasn't changed is our mutual purpose. Let's just frame it up in a way that has us stepping out of all the stuff that's going on right now and stepping back in a very safe way. So it might be that we just need to step out and regroup.
Love it. And the other acronym, last one is AAMP. Is that one that you're still using in the training?
Yeah, and probably more. And what AAMP is about, it's about I might have, we talked about before and during, I might have done everything right. I might have done everything right in the training, in the conversation, but someone's still in silence. Someone's still in silence. And so I love the great term that one of the authors, Al Switzer, always used. He calls it priming the pump. And that means I've said something and I said to Ryan, we had this conversation about the piece of equipment and I'm saying to Ryan, are you okay with that? And I know Ryan's going, yep. And when Ryan says yep, what do I know?
Sounds
I know
safe.
Yep means no. It means no. Okay. And so part of this is asking, part of this acronym is asking. And that might be, Ryan, I know you're saying yeah, but my sense is we're a long way from, right. Because Ryan actually is still a little bit wounded about the whole thing. He still thinks that, he's had a bad day and all for him. So that's all about priming the pump is, I'm wondering, is there a problem? Does that make sense? Is there a problem? And so, we talk about, and some of the other, the skills we talk about in it is, we talk about M is mirroring. Mirroring is that, when someone says something and someone says, yeah, I'm fine. What mirroring says is, Ryan, when you say fine, you know, they used to talk about this in real estate. This is not what the skill's about. It's when someone's standing or someone has a particular tone of voice, you mirror that. That's not what we're talking about. When Ryan says fine, mirroring says is, Ryan, you say fine. I'm thinking we are anti-fine. I'm thinking we're anywhere near but fine. Can you help me out? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And basically paraphrasing is not parroting, but parroting is basically that. So when I'm mirroring, what I'm doing is I'm saying to someone, I'm stepping up to them as to where they are right now. And the paraphrasing is basically repeating back what they said. And when I repeat something back, I'm not parroting, but what I'm doing is I'm not wanting to frame it up in any other way other than what they have said. So someone said in the conversation, and you've repeated some of those things back to me today. You've picked up words and things I've used. And so, you know, my way with Ryan, when I think he hasn't, and I'm asking the question, what I'm saying to him is that, Ryan, when you say I'm fine, I'm paraphrasing back, you said I'm fine, okay, it doesn't sound fine. Can you help me out? And Ryan doesn't say anything. And what I'm saying now is that, Ryan, it seems like... It's hard to paraphrase, is it not? It's if someone hasn't said a word, they've gone completely to silence. And so it sounds to me like we've slipped right out of the conversation. Is that how you see it? Or, you know, is there something that we can talk about that clears up what I think has happened? And that what I think has happened is we've talked about what happened yesterday and I think we're stuck on it. That's what I think. Can you help me out? Does that make sense? And that's really, that skill set is about helping people out of silence. There's an additional skill set, which is about accountability. It's when I find there's a problem, how we resolve the problem. But let's now, so AMP is really about getting someone out of silence, even though I think we're traveling well, but Ryan keeps diving back into silence. And I want to better understand by using the framework what's actually going on in his brain. And let's see if we can clear it up now.
Beautiful. So AAMP, ask what's going on, mirror.
Yep. Yep.
Paraphrase.
And P is paraphrasing. So, and I love the term, and that's the term, you know, if you've got a property or whatever, the priming a pump is, you know, if you've got an electric pump or something, you've got to fill it up with water first. So what I'm doing is I'm filling it with water so I can get something through. Does that make sense? And the way I do it is I've done everything right. I've hopefully created a safe platform. I've used my state skills. I've been clear on my intent. I've shared facts. I've told, you know, so I've shared the facts, okay? I have asked what's going on, but the problem I have now is I don't think we're at the point that we can agree on where we go from here. And so this is where the AMP skills, and this is, I said to you before, Ryan, this is why sometimes people walk away from training feeling like they've got a concrete wheelbarrow full of skills. These are additional skills. And so AMP is a key one around when someone goes to silence, which is why, again, I'd always recommend if some, you know, part of your preparation is if someone continues to go to silence, how might I frame that up? Sometimes it's hard to prepare in advance because I don't know how they might react, but it's understanding people might go to silence. And so if someone does go to silence or someone says something that you know is not correct, how I step in a safe way that has them speaking the truth.
Awesome. And I like that wheelbarrow metaphor is making more sense now.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting here looking at my screen going, oh, there's another tool I'd really like to unpack. But yeah. let's say we've probably given the audience of this show a lot to chew on and a pretty heavy wheelbarrow. And so to learn more of those skills, then your next step would be to re-listen to the episode if you want to, and then go in and look at the book and find out where the Vital Smarts organization is in your local area, and potentially look at what other training is available. So just before we do wrap up, Jeff, and thank you so much for sharing all of that.
Very welcome.
I, from a purely selfish point of view, absolutely loved it, and I think it's going to be super beneficial for the podcast audience as well. But I was hoping, just before we finish up, to take the information we've just learned and discuss how we might apply it to a specific example. Is that okay with you?
Yep, sounds good.
So via my role, I often get asked for input on how to be effective in what I would label as crucial conversations that, as we've mentioned already in this episode, involve training techniques and philosophy. So what I've actually done, Jeff, is pulled a real-life example out of one of my Facebook groups, with permission of the person who posted it, of course, and was hoping to use this example, but I'm not going to use any names. So this is reading this post. Paraphrased a little bit because the person's first language was not English. So I've just tidied up some of the syntax. Yesterday, I was booked for a dog training consult. It was my first appointment with the dog owner, who also has several horses and is a professional show jumper. After some small talk, he told me that he had already worked with several dog trainers in the last few months and that he didn't like their way of training. He asked me about my training approach, and I told him that my training is based on the science of behavior. I follow ethical guidelines and that I'm force-free positive reinforcement trainer. Now comes the part where I need some advice and help of this force-free community. After explaining my training approach, the owner got a little bit upset and mocked me, saying, "Try this with a horse and you'll be hurt. Try this with a horse and they'll never accept you as a leader. Try this with a horse and you'll see that he'll never work without force. This is just anti-authoritarian education. An animal needs to know its limits and boundaries. Without punishment, you will never be able to train horses and dogs." I tried to explain better. Then he pointed to the horse barn and said, "Go to this horse and it will prove you wrong." I was so speechless and taken by surprise that I cut this conversation short and told the owner that I'm not the right trainer for him, and I left. Have you ever experienced something like this? Can you offer advice or suggestions?
Interesting one, isn't it?
It's actually, I would say, a pretty common one, Jeff, in the kind of conversations that I was hoping to help people out with this episode today.
I guess my first port of call is to say that this is never the magic bullet. You know, like there are some conversations in some organisations that, you know, if a situation is it's irreversible, irretrievable, or there's just someone that you're just not going to be able to work with. This is not going to, you know, gloss everything over and make it good. So I guess we've just got to imagine that, you know, this is a person that potentially we can help, and we can, you know, we can work with them. And I would imagine for your, you know, clients, the first thing they want to establish is, can I actually work with this person? Can I talk with this person? You know, is this person going to see me as the expert, or are they going to shoot down every idea I have? And so that's all those things, I guess, that go on in your mind, but probably don't go on your mind in your mind with that person at the time that they were getting a bit of, you know, like a barrage of information. They probably weren't thinking that way. You know what they were thinking at the time, Ryan? Fight or flight. That's all they were thinking. And so if they were to get back into the game with this person and it's using this framework, the first thing I'd do is I would do my preparation by, you know, writing out, this is how the conversation went, this is how I'd like it to go. And so what I'd do is I would write up front, what's my intent? Right up front with this person. And let's talk about what that looks like in a second. And then I'd write down things like, how might it become unsafe, and what contrasting skills, and again, you need to read contrasting. If I'd recommend, if you walk away from today, just learn how to contrast. How might I contrast to get that conversation back on track? And then number three is, what does that state conversation look like? And so if I was going to talk about intent, and I had the space, and, you know, this particular person had the motivation to want to go back to this particular prospective customer, they might start with something like, when they talk to them, I said, look, appreciate all your input from last time. I get all that. I'm wondering if we can talk about a couple of ways that I might be able to help. I wonder if we can talk about a couple of ways that I might be. That's saying, you know, at the end of the day, we can't help everyone. We can't, you know, this might not work. Can we talk about that? And the person might get a yep. So, you know, we've managed that hazardous half minute pretty well. You know, my intention, you know, with all my customers is to help them get better results from, you know, they're working with animals, but do it in a way that has you using some of my learning with some other learning that we have from wherever it is with what you already know, and put all those together. That's what I want to be able to do. Is that okay? Great, done. That's why I'd always recommend have this written up front, because it's easy now, not easy when you're under pressure. So then I'd start at, when we met last time, this is what you said, this and this. Now, this is where you've got to be crystal, absolutely crystal clear. It's facts, not stories. Because stories blend into facts so easily, and if I don't get these right. So when we met last time, you said this and this and this. Got that? I could be completely wrong, and I could be way off track. But what I'm thinking is this and this. This is what I'm thinking. Tell me, have I got that right? So all that's doing is stating what we previously covered. You're going to use probably a little bit of AMP skills, because you said, when you said this, this is what I think. When you said this, this is what I think. I could be wrong. That's that tentative. I could be completely wrong. If the conversation was really bad, I'll be uber tentative. I could be way off track, but. So I think it was this and was this. Can you tell me, is that how you saw it? Now, if you can't get through that, it's possible that this is a person that you can't work with. But if you get through that, the key is, can we walk away today with a way that we can both help you get that but also has us talking about when you're not sure about the methodology, let's talk about that so we don't get stuck in it and we can both work together. How does that sound, Ryan? That's probably, I know, a lot of information, but the first part of all that when I prepare beforehand is how did the conversation become unsafe and look at some simple ways that I can get it back to safety so we can talk about the real issues. Because what we both want, what's our intent? Our intent is for him to get the best results for him as animals.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think there's something that we can all remember as animal trainers, that is the mutual purpose that we always have, to get the best results for everyone's animals and the humans working with the animals. And sometimes there's people that don't care about that, but potentially, Jeff, then that's a different conversation, isn't it?
Absolutely. Sometimes for people in organisations, we've done everything we can and we're not going anywhere. That's an organisational issue. But that's another conversation. That's the time as leaders we cannot go to helplessness, because a problem slides and we suffer. It's like a rock in a pond. We suffer all sorts of consequences. But, you know, it might be that there are people out there we just can't work with. But if they can and we have the both same mutual purpose, then we can always use that as our points north to get back to.
Absolutely loved it. Hey, Jeff, that was really helpful, really great information. Really appreciate you taking time out of your business day today to hang out with us animal trainers and talk about the valuable information that Vital Smarts and you over there in Australia are disseminating. So can you just remind everyone the good next steps after listening to this episode? Would it be to go pick themselves up a book, do you think, or investigate the other training opportunities? Yeah. Or
good place to start. Simple things you can do is, if you've got a copy of the book, just learn how to contrast. Just read that chapter. Start with that. It's a great way to get, and you can implement it today. You can start on it today. The other one is, apart from maybe downloading the Audible version, is if you go to the Vital Smarts site, and what you can actually do globally is you can just, if you just Google Vital Smarts and type in style under stress, it'll take you to a link and you can complete it online. You'll have the results back pretty much straight away. My recommendation is that if you read it and don't think it's you, and you've done it pretty much correctly, give it to someone else and get, you know, someone else who's close to you and get their perspective. I've found when someone says often, I don't think that's me, you give it to someone else and they'll say, no, that's a mirror of who you are. But that's always a good way, and sometimes a good cathartic way, of better understanding whether I go to silence and violence. Because it doesn't matter which it is, it's all about how you have to currently deal with the consequences of going to silence and violence and simply what you can do about it.
Yeah, cool. And I can tell you, as listeners of the show, I did the style under stress online survey. Would you call it a survey, Jeff? Use the tool.
Yep.
And learn some things about myself.
Yeah. Good place to start.
It's not the most pleasant experience, is it? Acknowledging your style under stress.
Well, as I said, it can be, when I talk about cathartic may not be pain-free.
But necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be effective. As I mentioned, Jeff, we really appreciate you taking time to come out, and I know this isn't potentially your normal area of time spent with animal trainers, so I appreciate you coming and doing that. But of course, we're all humans and we all have conversations, and we all, like you said, across the world, are subject to the things we've been talking about today and that transverses cultures. So thank you for today. Thank you for, we caught up a few weeks ago. Thank you for taking time for that. Thank you for taking time for sending messages back and forth. Thank you in advance for taking time in the process between now and getting this going live. And just thank you. Very grateful for everything that you've done to help out Animal Training Academy and its audience. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Ryan. Hopefully that's made a difference. But, you know, great to connect today.
Yeah, and hopefully you out there listening to this have taken away a lot as well. And we appreciate you tuning in today to have a listen. If you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about how to engage in crucial conversations and working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of the episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior nerds. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much for listening, everyone, and you will hear from us again soon.